it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome to Girls Room, where each week we unpack the foundational text of the 2010s, HBO's Girls. I'm Julia Gray. I have my incredible co-host with me, Drew Haskins.
Howdy.
And we have a really special episode and two very special guests. One returning guest, the comedians and hosts of the hilarious podcast, Stradiolab, George Severus and Sam Taggart. What's up?
Chilling. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the
what show. What a great little thing to do on a, meaning watching the episode on a Monday, like in the middle of the workday. I had a blast.
Yeah, same. I was being really, really unproductive, and I was like, it's really time to buckle down and get to work. Let's watch TV.
It can be a real treat watching TV during the day. You feel kind of naughty, but also you can fool yourself into thinking it's productive, or I can, because we do the show.
I will say I could never be an actual professional TV critic. I think it would fuck with my mind too much to be watching TV for work all day.
Yeah.
I think it would actually make me a deeply unhappy person.
No, there's the writer Caroline Framke just wrote this whole piece about it, because I think she used to work at
Variety.
Yeah. She just wrote about how like she's finally able to enjoy TV again, mm-hmm. now that she's not like tied to the professional shackles of having to watch even the bad stuff for work. I'm sure you have to sift through so much absolutely terrible television just to like write like two pieces about like the fun stuff.
Yeah, totally. I write about music here and there, and it's made me really not like listening to music.
Yeah, and also like at least if you're a film critic, you can go to premieres. I mean, I guess there are TV premieres too, but you know, you can go to like Cannes. You can, you know, there's more glamour there.
You're going abroad.
You're going abroad,
and you're going to dress nicer.
Yeah, you know what's not? You know what's not premiering at Venice? Yellow Jackets.
And why not though?
I mean, The Idol is at Cannes right now.
I know. Like, I thought about that. Like, I thought about that as I said it.
Damn. No, but normally you're going to like New House or like whatever the New York equivalent of New House is. So
yeah, wow.
Toxic fact checking.
I think we have a bit of a lag. I said, is The Idol still coming out?
Oh yeah, it's literally premiering at Cannes as we speak.
Yeah.
Oh my god! So we really just kind of moved past that whole scandal.
Well, it's tough to like engineer a scandal about something that like no one's seen yet. And okay, let me figure out how to phrase this. Toxic onset behavior is a tale as old as time. And I do not think the average red-blooded American citizen cares about toxic onset behavior. They're just going to watch the show and be like, it's good or it's bad.
People don't care about, like, the average person literally doesn't care about anything in Hollywood. Like, even the big Harvey Weinstein, literally the biggest misconduct story. Literally, I think to this day, the average American would not recognize the name Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
I was visiting home this past week, and my mom kept bugging me about, like, should we separate the art from the artist? I don't know why. I don't know what New York Times article she read.
Well, there's a new book about it.
Oh, that's
bad. I think it's called Monsters or something, but it's, like, catnip for, no offense, moms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I didn't know what to say. She was talking about the ladies at her book club, which they all said they can't listen to Michael Jackson anymore. But my mom wants to listen to Michael Jackson. I don't know what to tell her.
Isn't it so funny that it all comes back to us? Like, it's like, even just like systemic abuse, you're like, wait, how does this impact me? Am I allowed to play my CD?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we don't want to disrupt our lives too much because of the crimes of someone else. That would be morally inconvenient.
Yeah, and I can't be inconvenienced. I'm already so busy. I feel like with Michael Jackson, I'm like, well, I'm not going to put it on my playlist, but if I'm in the airport and it's playing, I'm if I'm having to hear it, I'm going to find a way to enjoy it. I'm not going to be like, and don't forget his crimes.
Yeah. So maybe we should get to another kind of moral reckoning.
It's time.
So we have asked George this question before, but Sam, before we get into talking about the episode of Girls that we're here to talk about, we want to hear about your experience with the show. When did you come to it? Were you always a fan? What's your journey with Lena?
My journey was, I was a pretty early adopter. I was obsessed. I moved to Brooklyn maybe as it was coming out. Like, it was like, there was a while where I was like, oh, I'm insane. The show is about me. Like, it would be like, in episode 2, they go to the Bushwick Warehouse party, which is crazy because last night I went to a Bushwick Warehouse party. And it was like, I'm a dog walker. And oh my God, I'm walking through the set of Girls. I wonder if they're just going to cast me as a dog walker on Girls. Like, it would be like, I was obsessed with it and also like psychically tortured by it because it was just like so close to home. Just being like, I live in Greenpoint, she lives in Greenpoint. Like, it's like, what's real, what's fake? So I was all in.
I saw your show Club Comic, which I loved, and I think in a song you say, if I recall correct, that you watched the season finale in Bushwick.
I watched the season 2 premiere of HBO's Girls at a loft in Bushwick. I went there because a friend invited me, and because he was friends with the person that lived there, and I met the guy, and he was like kind of this boring guy, and then later I saw that guy on a poster for a TV show called How To with John Wilson. I watched HBO's Girls with John Wilson.
That's
yeah, it doesn't get more Brooklyn than that, baby.
It really doesn't. When was your last rewatch?
I think I tried in the pandemic, and I'm such a bad rewatcher that I was like, I'm always like, let's do it. Like, I'm sorry to dive in. And I watched the first episode and then stopped. But I was like, this is so good, I'm going to do it. And then I just I can't rewatch at like a whole series. It's very difficult for me.
I do also think the show has a problem with bingeability. Like, I hate that word, but like, I cannot watch more than a few episodes of this at a time. And when I think about really rewatchable shows like 30 Rock or Sex and the City, like, you can just mainline a bunch of those at once. Like, I do not have the emotional fortitude to do more than like 3 episodes of this. It's just like, it's a little, especially like watching it now in my late 20s, like, it's a little too close to home.
Yeah.
Well, it's also less formulaic and more, dare I say, cinematic. So it's like, it's also, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but in a quite literal way, inconsistent in that, not in terms of quality, just in terms of like 2 episodes in a row will be very different from one another. So, and some of them are really sort of like emotional or sad or whatever. And I just think like with 30 Rock, or with Sex and the City, the tone is pretty constant and you can just sort of like have it as background noise in a way you can't with Girls.
And I can do that with darker shows too. Like, SVU is just unrelenting misery.
Yeah, but again, formulaic and like, you know exactly what to expect.
No, like, I know the misery that I'm getting into, and like, it's just going to be at that one level. So I can kind of like just set the dial to that frequency and just tune out.
Perfect. Yeah, totally. Even just out of respect, I feel like I can, like, a show I can watch before bed like is like The Simpsons. I watch The Simpsons before bed, and I've like watched the same 8 seasons like a few times now, and it's like I can rewatch it because I'm like, well, I can ignore this at any point, whereas Girls, I'm like, no, this mattered. I don't want to just put this on and fall asleep halfway through.
Totally.
Right, it's not a show for folding laundry.
Like, yeah, exactly.
No.
How do you guys think it holds up in the, I guess, you know, public view?
I think it's, I mean, I feel like the last few years it's had a resurgence of like respect. I think, you know, we were all there when it was coming out, and everyone was like, it was such a polarizing show that some people fucking hated and some people were like, this is genius. And it was complicated, and now I feel like it's way less complicated with some distance, and people are just like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I was always, I think I maybe mentioned this last time I was on, but I was always like overly generous with it, in the sense that even if there was an episode that my first thought was, oh, that was not very good, in my mind I was like, but she knows what she's doing. It was probably bad, like probably the things that I think are flaws are like little Easter eggs where like they'll be resolved later on. And to be honest, to this day, I sort of feel that way. Like there is something about girls that I really become like math lady meme scientist when I watch it, where I'm like, like I refuse to believe anything is a mistake. And then it almost becomes like my own, it's like a challenge to myself. Like, how can I interpret this in a way that makes it as smart as possible? Like, it's almost like toxic generosity to the artist.
It's also like I feel very similarly. I feel like part of the appeal of the show is like in the ways it broke more traditional like structures. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember being like, okay, wait, you're like, even in this episode being like, okay, the dad's just gay now. Like, I remember being like, you can't just do that. Like, this makes no sense. And now I'm like, nope, that was genius. Like, to just be like, I don't care. It's going to happen.
Yeah. I was reading some of the like, weekly recaps that they used to do like on AV Club and Slate about this episode, and the commonality between all of them was like, this plot development comes out of left field, what is this adding to the plot? And then you think about, well, the rest of the episodes this season and also kind of the rest of the show, and it's like, let her cook, like everything ties together so well. In yeah. the Tad arc in later seasons is one of the show's most rewarding. Like
100%.
I think you just have to have faith that a good showrunner and a good creator can land the plane.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, not to state the obvious, but it's not out of left field. It's literally harkening back to one of the most iconic scenes in Girls, where right. Andrew Rannells tells Lena Dunham their dad is gay, and it even has the same line, your dad is gay, and that's like the last thing you hear in this episode, which I think, like, I mean, I don't know, to me I'm like, how you know, distrustful do you have to be of the creator to not think of that as intentional, to think of what like a coincidence? Like, obviously it is intentionally sort of like doing a little callback to an earlier storyline.
Yeah,
I completely agree. That's what I mean, the Elijah episode, which I think was season one or season two,
mm-hmm.
when he mm-hmm. says your dad mm-hmm. is gay by I don't know, from that episode on I sort of saw Tad differently, and I thought, yeah, this
yeah
makes- yeah
well, but also it is, I mean, it's not just hearkening back to your dad is gay, it's also a parallel between Lena's journey and her mom's journey. Like, literally in that episode, Lena's college boyfriend is coming out to her as gay, and now we see the generational trauma of her mom going through the same thing like later on. I mean, it's in fact incredibly symmetrical and well thought out.
Yeah. So other questions we ask before we get into the episode, which girl are you, Sam?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, I feel it's so natural to be like, which Sex and the City girl are you? But which girl am mm-hmm. I? Damn. I guess I would have to say, I'm dying here. I'm like, okay, because the problem is none of them thrive. Thrive.
I think by the end Shoshana thrives, and I think in fact you, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but if I had to choose, I would say you are sort of a Shoshana in that you are at face, like, you know, a sort of on a surface level silly and cute, but then like deep inside you actually are a girl boss.
Well, that's really nice of you to say. I was leaning more towards Marnie, well, because of course of my singing career and my delusion. George, what did you say to this question?
I don't remember,
but I maybe this is just like my self-loathing, but I would say I'm a Hannah. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say I'm like, I have all her flaws, and then any sort of self-awareness I have about those flaws only makes me like more annoying or something. Like, there's just like, it's like I try so hard to run fast enough to like to be like, no, I already saw, you know, the whole thing that Hannah says of like, whatever anyone can say about me, I've already said about myself. It's like, yeah, you think you're going to win that battle, but no, it's just going to make you sort of like more irritating to be around if you're like constantly trying to be self-aware.
Wow. Well, yeah, I don't think I'm Hannah necessarily, but Shosh doesn't feel right. I'm going to have to continue to reflect. But we'll say Shosh with a little bit of Marnie for now.
Yeah. It's also, it is a harder choice to make than like picking the Sex and the City girls, because with the Sex and the City girls, you're kind of leaning towards like the aspirational side of things and trying to recognize the positive traits in these women by and large. And like, with the girls crew, you are aligning your flaws to them, which I think is a much harder exercise. Totally.
Yeah,
it's almost like with Sex and the City you're like, what are my strengths, and with girls you're like, what are my flaws?
Also with Sex and the City it's more like even like, what are your politics or something. It's like, whereas like girls, it's, they all sort of have the same politics, it's more about how they go about pursuing things.
Yeah, their politics are, they're apolitical.
Yeah.
Their politics are, I'm still with her.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
Yeah. Damn. That framing the Sex and the City girls like that, that's, as a Charlotte and a leftist, I just want to say we can't exist. Like, we are, we,
well, I mean, now Charlotte is like the most leftist of all. It's really just like that.
Oh, I'm actually so excited for the new season.
I can't wait.
Oh my god.
Literally might host the premiere party.
Ugh, I can't imagine another season of that, which is why it's going to be so, so beautiful.
I literally don't know where they could take this world.
Yeah. The trailer gave me some hope because they were at lunch a lot more, which is one of the things I really wanted them to do more for season two, just more meals, more sitting in chairs, more static shots. That's if we have even like 20% more of that, it will be a success in my eyes.
See, for me, I'm like, what I want is a guy of the week. Like, go back to, make it a, I mean, Sex and the City was a monster of the week procedural, basically, just with guys. Like, just lean into that, especially now that Carrie is single again, you know, like, have her, it's like, why are we bringing Aiden back and having her like have a relationship with her podcast producer or whatever, like have a different, and then you can bring in like exciting guest stars. I mean, I don't know who would want to be involved in it, but you know, you'll find someone.
Well, I mean, they got Aiden back, so that'll be something, not positive probably, but something. And then they have Sam Smith.
Yeah, they have Sam. The fact Sam that Aiden Smith is doing both Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 and Sex and the City again, it's like, man, you gotta find a new thing.
Yeah.
Wait, Sam Smith, can we back up?
Yeah. What are they up to in this?
Sam Smith is playing themselves. I hope they date Carrie. I hope like Carrie ones up Miranda and Shay by like, oh, you're going to blow up your life for a non-binary person. Well, I'm gonna date Sam Smith. And then they have like a competing scenario. They go to like a museum gala and they're like, what are you doing here with them? And then it's a whole thing. That's what I want.
We can't do Sam Smith. I really don't want that.
No. When you said Sam Smith, for whatever reason, my mind went to Sam Elliott, and I thought Sam Elliott was a love interest for one of the girls. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fine. And now I'm really actually in shock that it's Sam Smith.
I would have loved it if they'd cast Sam Elliott on in just like that season two after his like cowboys can't be gay comments from last year.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That's his like his love letter to the queer community is like showing up as like Charlotte's like Western dentist or something who Carrie dates. I should write for this show.
Yeah, you really should.
That's a genius plot.
I think they need help.
A Western dentist. I can't believe they haven't thought of that before.
Last question. Since y'all are experts in straight culture, we wanted to ask, who's the straightest girl?
I mean, the obvious choice is Marnie.
Yeah. She's, yeah.
But Shoshana's up there.
I was going to say Shoshana too.
However, There is an argument to be made almost that Hannah is the straightest one of all.
Mm-hmm. What's that argument?
I think it's sort of like she is, you know, oh my God, I literally could not think of the name Jane Austen. I was like there is something about Hannah where it's like she is a quintessential female hero in the vein of like a Jane Austen character or something, where you're like, Hannah is sort of tragically straight, to use a cliched term. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Sam?
I guess there's something to it. I guess it's just like, in the literal sense, I feel like she would just be like a bisexual for an episode, you know? Yeah. Like,
no, it's true.
I think culturally, I know what you mean, but I think that in practice, she'd be a little bi or something.
And so we have, when we have Shoshana going up against Marnie, Shoshana, of course, made out with Jessa. And there was even some sexual chemistry there. And Marnie had penetrative sex with a gay man. So I think maybe Marnie is the more straight one.
I forgot about that one.
Oh, wait. No, but Marnie also made out. Wait, no. It was Jessa and Shoshana. Yeah, Marnie is the straightest.
Marnie and Jessa also made out once, though.
Oh, they did?
Thomas Brown's apartment.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. It wasn't Shoshana, it was Marnie.
Yeah.
Oh, so Shoshana has never... are cousins, so oh, like that right. would be a little.
Okay, no, you're so right, and I completely. All right, so then Marnie is, I guess it evens out. She's bi.
I mean, I do think having sex with a gay man is queering the act.
Yeah. Okay. So Shoshana is the straightest one. Shoshana's the straightest one, and that also makes her even more endearing, because she's sort of a classic, like, she's the straightest one, but she's also the one that would be the best friend to a gay man.
Mm.
Yes.
True.
She definitely has the most, like, heteronormative ending, too. Like, she gets married, she, like, his full girl boss, like, it is kind of, like, what the girls, like, should be doing, like, in a vacuum, but just don't.
Yeah. All right. It's Shosh.
Yeah. Done. Yeah.
Wow.
Great.
But she loved Tokyo so much. That feels.
But like having a life-changing experience studying or working abroad, I think, is canonical straight girl behavior.
Also, you know who else loves Tokyo? Right. Gwen Stefani, and she's married to Blake Shelton.
And Republican now.
And she's a Republican.
I do agree, though, that I cannot see Hannah as anything but straight.
Mm.
Yeah. She also is sort of defined by her, I mean, very offensive what I'm about to say, sort of defined by her relationship to capital M men.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's by her kind of obsession with them, and just continued obsession with finding someone.
So should we get into the episode itself?
Let's do it.
So just to recap, last episode we saw the unraveling of Mimi Rose Howard. Hannah goes on a date with her coworker Fran, played by Jake Lacy, and brings him to Mimi Rose's art show, Ask Me My Name. Fran realizes he's being used to upset Adam and leaves, and Hannah ends up spending most of the night with Mimi Rose, who shows her true colors as a manipulator by offering to give Adam to Hannah, and also shows that she and Hannah have some overlap in the narcissism and imposter syndrome department. Let's start, I guess, Julia, should we start with Hannah's storyline?
Yeah, I think that might be better than going chronologically. I do think we should end with the big Tad and Laureen plot. Yeah. So Hannah made a new friend at school. Her name is Maude Apatow. So we see her and Maude, aka Cleo, talking about Maude's crush, who apparently has HPV and had sex with a girl from Long Island at Auschwitz on teen tour, which is an incredible detail from this student of a like progressive Upper East Side school.
This line, I was like, this show is so funny. I always forget like how like writing like comedy it is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, this is not fair. She has it all.
I wrote in my notes, Mod Apatow. I wrote in my notes, Mod Apatow, just to like sort of remember that. Yeah. And then in the next scene, I wrote slays.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, she's slaying.
I literally only have written down Mod Apatow is so talented.
She's really good.
I also wrote, she's perfect in this role. Like, she's a good Nepo baby. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, go after Nepo babies in general, but I think she is a good one.
She's a really good one.
She's a good one. She understands her role.
I just rewatched This Is 40 for the first time in a decade, like a few months ago. Maude and Iris both tear it crazy.
Oh my God.
Movie. They're so great.
Also, I don't know if any of you watched the Netflix show Love with Paul Rust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Iris Apatow is in that, and she's like literally giving an Emmy worthy performance as like she plays a spoiled child actor, and Paul Rust is her onset tutor. And she's just like torturing him the whole time. She's such a brat. And it's really like those girls are talented.
Yeah.
They really are. Honestly, I also love Leslie Mann. Also think she's such a talent.
100%.
They had a lot to work with parent wise.
And like, I like a lot of those early Judd Apatow movies too. Like they're so long, but it's kind of easy to forget that girls started as partially like an Apatow universe brainchild, and like they do a good job of kind of like foregrounding that for most of the show's run, but like when she popped up today or like in this episode, I was like, oh yeah, like this is like a Judd Apatow project sort of still too. But the body horror of the piercing scene, I had to like look away from
me though. Too I was like, you know what, this is not, I can't do this right now.
I did not know it was called a frenulum, but it is so perfect that Hannah wants to get their frenulum. It's very, I'm in high school and I'm trying to rebel. Like, she knows exactly why it's the right piercing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, the regression she's able to do when she's like, your mom's not going to notice it, but you're still going to feel it every time you move your tongue. Like, great. Like,
it's also just like the way that it's season 4 and Hannah is still going to get a piercing with her high school student. Like, there, you know that there could be someone in that room, in the writer's room, that's like, no, that's like too on the nose. Like, she has to like progress. And it's like, no, she doesn't.
No. This whole substitute teacher thing is really, yeah, putting her back a few steps.
Yeah. Even when they were like dancing and the construction guy was like catcalling them and Hannah's like, we're children. I was like, that is so funny.
The music choices on the show are always so good, but like Problem is such a stuck in 2014 song.
Totally.
It was like, of course these two would like get down to like early Ariana Grande music, like perfect little shorthand.
Ugh.
But the piercing scene, yeah, I had to turn away from the piercing scene, but like the funniest line from that for me was Hannah saying, listen, as an older woman, a great lesson I can teach you is that it's okay to change your mind, which is such like a perfectly like superficially wise thing to say to someone who has just gotten their like tongue ripped open. Like,
yeah, Hannah's like mental gymnastics in this episode of like always somehow using like feminist language to her advantage are so, it's like so expertly written. Even later when she's talking to Fran and she's like, I'm aware of the new misogyny, how like you find a woman that is completely in control of herself and then like make her think she's crazy or whatever, and you're like, no, you're the one being crazy right now. But she's always, and then, or that at the end when she's like talking to her mom about being dramatic, it's, I mean,
yeah,
that character.
I love that this kind of new language she's given to her, I guess, narcissism coincides with her going back to this progressive high school. Like, she's been given
totally
this new kind of vocabulary. It's crazy.
The piercing scene, I was also like, this is boring. Like, she's starting to be a little socio here. I was like, this is like any normal, like sometimes they make Hannah like so like over the top where I'm like, a normal person would be like, stop. Like, like the girl was like begging to stop. And I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I think it was like a perfect, like you couldn't have chosen a better thing for them to do to kind of just get it into our heads that this is such an inappropriate relationship. Yeah. Like if they had just gone to the mall or done something maybe bad, but maybe got like a drink at a bar, it wouldn't have been this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like just awful, unbearable.
But then we wouldn't have gotten Maude Apatow calling Hannah like a pussy with her like tongue on the roof of her mouth, which I once again, I was like, Maude Apatow, so talented.
Oh, yeah. I think that's when I wrote down that she slays. I was like, I mean, it's also like such a dream role for if she wasn't an Epa Baby for like, you know, some new actress to be like, I'm going to make my mark here. Like, it is such a great guest role in a show. And she knocked that out of the park.
Yeah. I also really love the scene with her and Fran. Like, I mean, when she like advocates for herself in the worst possible way. But like, I really love Jake Lacy as just like a that guy character actor. And the way that he kind of just subtly reveals Fran's weird home life, like his ex pouring battery acid on all of his plants. It's like, He's so good at just like couching everything like this normalcy, but like there's a lot of darkness.
Yeah, I also wrote down that line of her using her feminism, where it's like, take someone, you want to take a woman who's in control of her life and silence her, and I'm into it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so good. Really having it both ways, having your cake and eating it too.
I also love that she doesn't know where to get battery acid. She's like, do you just chop up a bunch of batteries?
I feel like that's such a Hannah thing to like harp on to be having a conversation and then harp on a detail and go on some detour. And everyone's like, Hannah, that's like not what this conversation is about.
Right. Like instead of being like, no, I'm mentally sound, I would never do that. She's like, no, that sounds really difficult.
Totally,
I would never do that.
yeah. Also just the, I'm not the person you think I am. And he says, no, you are exactly the person that I think you are. I don't think you are the person who you think you are.
I mean, talk about like a thesis statement for the whole show. Yeah. I wrote that down too.
Exactly. Like, you know, she has no idea how she comes off or how to set boundaries. And I love Fran as this kind of straight man who is just reflecting.
Totally. Also the sequence of events of like her trying to prove that she's normal and then the immediate next scene is her taking a teenager to get her tongue pierced.
Also quick aside, I love the students at this school being named Ryder and Rainbow.
I love that.
Very Montessori school vibes.
Also the Maude Apatow line when she's like, I have a crush on Shia LaBeouf, and Hannah's like, well, you don't, you know, I get it, like, but that's a celebrity, you're never gonna, and she's like, no, he lives in my building. And I was like, this is so funny.
Of course he does. Also, I love that that's Hannah's reasoning, like, well, you'd never be able to get him.
In the minute she finds out that like she does have access to him, she like changes her tune. She's like, well, he's a real fixer-upper, but I think like he's really sensitive and you can fix him. I'm like, suck up to a 15-year-old. Like, love it. So that's kind of where we leave Hannah for now. I guess let's talk about Marnie and Desi. These two, until like they get married, like these plot lines really drag for me, but like they have a fight about Desi getting a shipment of German guitar pedals that he says will change their lives because they created the distortion that became the My Bloody Valentine sound, which...
I mean, that's great writing.
Yeah.
That's fun. But they are flop. Desi is full flop. The whole plot line it's flop for me. Making Marnie delusional works until then you're like following it forever and you're like, well, I don't actually want to see them be in a band, or like, you know what I mean?
Totally. I do think Marnie's acting is really great in this episode, just like with she's not given much to do, but she does a really good job. I also, okay, remind me, are we meant to think in retrospect that at this point Desi does have a pill addiction?
We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet, but like when he ends up, when he ends up coming out as, because I'm like, you know, with that in mind, he is acting like someone who is on drugs.
For sure.
Yeah, especially at the end during the proposal scene, like he does seem a little like strung out and off. Yeah. And like just in like inarticulate too, like he's like saying like, thanks for moving my day, rain cloud. Yeah. Like that is not like something so personal.
That's that too. Or I could also see him saying it though. Like I feel like maybe it's hard to remember how I first understood the show, but I don't know if we're supposed to see the signs. I think it just, he seems erratic. And
oh, totally. Yeah. Well, also every character in this show is like operating at this sort of heightened level. I mean, yeah, Hannah is not on drugs, but she's taking a teenager to get her tongue pierced. So then why would he not spend $2,000 on a whim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're in sort of like a delusional folia dough anyway. Totally. Like last episode when Marnie's talking about like their 100 downloads is like their big break moment. And as a former music industry professional, hearing them say that their advance was $2,000 made me like fall out of my chair. Cause that is like implausibly low, but like thinking that $2,000 is going to like change your life, or is that, that's like a major investment from the label. Like they are out of their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, one sort of funny meta element of Marnie's character is that her mom is played by Rita Wilson, who famously has like an ill-fated musical career where she like keeps trying to make it happen like year after year.
I did not know she had an ill-fated.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's amazing. I mean, she does just make so much sense as Marnie's mom, though.
I mean, I'm sure you guys talk about this every episode, but the casting on this show is like maybe the best casting in all of television.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Like even little things like we'll get to Jason Ritter, but like Jason Ritter playing that character with Shoshana, or like, you know, the Hannah's parents in this episode. You're like, those two actors are so perfect for those exact roles.
Yeah, we just talked about Zachary Quinto last week too, as Gillian or Mimi Rose's boyfriend.
And Mimi Rose,
great casting. But like Zachary Quinto in that like smarmy downtown artist role, like he's great at it. Like who knew? But so I guess we should talk about the proposal. Marnie's at a coffee shop on her phone, and Desi comes to like run after her and apologize, and she's just like ignoring him. Any proposal that starts with the phrase, baby, please shut up for a sec.
That was, yes.
Ill-fated union.
He says he promised he'd never get married until his gay cousin Destin could.
I mean, that was perfect. That was genius. So sincere and so stupid.
Yeah. Another just perfect name choice in the show full of them. Like Destin. We don't even see Destin, but we know everything about him just from a name.
I've never heard the name Destin. I've heard the name Dustin, and I was almost going to write Dustin, but I figured that's what they meant, is a name that just.
When they also like zoomed out sort of the proposal, and you could like see all the other people just like casually sitting at whatever this like
coffee shop was.
It's like an
all day cafe. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was like, this is so embarrassing. That really hurt.
No, they might as well have gotten engaged in a Panera. Like, it's just bleak stuff.
Like Marnie just completely lighting up immediately. Like just, that's all she just, all she ever wanted were these kind of signifiers of what a happy person should be. And even though she hates Desi in this moment and he made the worst decision I've ever heard, she's like, oh my god, I'm getting married to my bandmate. My life really is a she and him music video for real.
She's in like a Stevie Nicks fantasy that will soon turn out. I loved the Shosh plotline this week. What a little delight. Like opening on her, plucking her pubes with like dishwashing gloves was just, what a little treat to start.
Remind me, where did, so she, because I, I hadn't watched like the episode before this one. Where did Jason Ritter come from? He's some kind of an executive. He's like rich and successful.
He has a cup noodle company.
Right. Okay.
And she was interviewing to be like a marketing
person. I see. Yes. Okay. It's all coming back to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was happening with her pubes? I didn't quite get it. I was like, what's going on with the pubes here?
She seems to be plucking her bikini line.
With like tweezers, right?
Ingrowns. Yeah. It seems wildly ineffective, but I'm assuming there's an ingrown hair situation. But then we immediately see her with gloves on and not explained, but maybe she's like giving herself a wax, doing a bleach. I don't know what we're supposed to get out of those gloves, but it's so perfect.
I did love her, like Jess is trying to advise her in like matters of love, and Shosha's like, I stopped listening to what you had to say a long time ago. Like the first sign of like divesting from after Beach House, like that's the first kind of explicit line we get about Shosh just pulling away from this group and trying to forge out on her own.
But then she does listen. I mean, then Jess is like, yeah, your life started going to hell when you stopped listening to me. And then and then sure enough, Shoshana acts like an absolute psychopath on the day.
Yeah.
I think Jessa just gaslights her into thinking that she needs to follow her advice, because Jessa has, I think she says, 4 suicide attempts under her belt.
I mean, that's perfect.
That's fun.
But we can maybe skip over Ray running for a minute.
Yeah.
I don't care about that.
Yeah.
No, like the beat that he's still in love with Marnie, though, I forgot how, like, I have talked ad nauseum on here about how much the Ray and Marnie plotline just like really dulls me out. But like, they really have stretched this on for seasons and seasons now. And I'm like, enough. Like, enough. It does set the stage, though, for Shosh acting like an absolute psycho on this day with Jason Ritter, who I love. Also a great that guy character actor.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, I mean, her hair clip was like such perfect costume design. Like the fact that she showed up with that bob and that hair clip.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I respected the bold choice.
I did too.
I was like, you know, for me, this is 50-50 if he's going to go for it.
And by the way, like, I'm sort of like, okay, if I was on a date where I was having fun, which they clearly were, and someone said that to me, I would like, yes, and it. Like, don't make her feel bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't really make her feel bad, which I think is...
Right.
Amazing. No.
Okay, we need to... There are a few things said that deserve our attention. Mm-hmm. He says that he was outed by his ex on Tumblr for being the embodiment of the white male oppressor after paying for her cat's dialysis.
I love that.
Shosh replies, bitches be cray, which is
classic Shosh.
It is.
As a shamanic comedic genius. Like,
and then did anyone write down the line?
Like the future of your cock line?
Yes.
I mean, the first thing is the future of your cock, and then she like keeps going.
Okay. I think we need to say it. Well, I have it written down. But
okay, please.
Because okay. I would love to hear one of you say it, though. Actually, no, I'm going to send it.
Okay.
I'm sending it in the chat.
All right.
I don't think I could get through saying this without clutching my pearls. Like, I'm like reading it on the page right now. Just like, imagine the writer's room session.
Sam and I can go.
Charlotte jumped out.
Sam and I can go sentence by sentence.
Oh, perfect.
We can alternate like we do when we do ad reads.
Well, it's.
Oh, wait, it's only this?
It's only this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Sam, do you want to take it?
Sure. The future of your big hard cock when I put my hand around it and it gets so hard and then I shove it into my slimy vagina like one of those deli pickles.
Oh, slimy.
Slimy, and deli pickles. She had me at Future of Your Big Hard Cock when I put my hand around it.
Totally.
It gets so hard. And then shove it into my slimy vagina is when it falls apart for me.
It's not respectful. I could even get with deli pickle, but slime, nothing should be slimy. I really think if she had workshopped slimy and maybe even used a more sort of pornographic word for vagina, mm-hmm. her choice yeah. as a woman, whichever one yeah. she wants to choose.
Yeah.
But yeah. deli pickle, I think, can be okay.
It could have been. I think deli pickle could have been okay. I think slimy is really worse.
Slimy's off.
Yeah.
I think deli pickle only would have been like deli pickle is sort of like if he responds affirmatively, then you can go in a deli pickle direction. Yeah. It can't be part of the opening line. You have to wait for a positive response and then deli pickle.
Yeah. That is like the nuclear option when it comes to like come online. It's like, and credit to him for being so down to clown that not only does he like take that in, but immediately pivot to, oh, look, Josh Charles is right over there. And they like bond over Loving the Good Wife. Like that is.
He's being very smooth. He's being very smooth. He looks so adorable. I gotta say.
Yeah. He has always been a cutie because I was watching Parenthood around this time too. And he was on Parenthood for like a few seasons. And he's always been like a little sweetie. I love him and Melanie Lynskey as a couple.
That I know they're so cute. He's very much a, you know, wife guy, as they say online.
Yes.
This is crazy. I've heard this guy's name, but I did not know, like, I have no idea who this man is. Like, I would have never recognized him in my life.
Well, did you know but he's married to Melanie Lynskey.
That's insane. I had no idea.
I know, they're very cute. In fact, they got married, like, I think they got married, like, during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Cool.
He's been in just like every little dramedy kind of thing over the past decade. And
he's very much like a Duplass Brothers player, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Is Parenthood good?
Love Parenthood.
People love to say that show is good.
People love it. Yeah.
I've never seen it.
I've never heard bad things about it. I've only heard good things.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. It's very gentle. A lot of actors you like in other things all together in this one thing. Great show. Perfect show.
I don't remember what happens with the Shoshana plot in like future eps. Do they stay dating or something?
They date until she goes to Japan, if memory serves.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I also don't really remember. Mm-hmm. But speaking of couples who don't really stay together, Tad and Laureen. Just incredible. And we teased it earlier, but Hannah's parents are just leaving couples therapy, and Laureen, bless her soul, says she thinks they really cracked it, and then Tad tells her that he's gay, and she does not believe him.
I'm on her side. I'm with her still. I'm still with her. I was also like, I wouldn't believe him. Like, it's like a crazy it's a crazy moment to say that it feels like you're trying to do something weird.
Yeah.
Like, but it also feels like a deflective technique or something.
100. But it's also like so true to, I feel like, I don't know what, you know, the people in this Zoom that have come out in the past, when and how they have done it, but it does always seem like, to me at least, it seems like it's actually very common, because it's something you put off and you procrastinate on, that sometimes it does come out at the most inopportune moments. Like, I remember when I came out to my parents, it was like I had been putting it off during a whole trip of visiting home from college. And I said it like as I was packing to leave to go back to college. And so we just had to sort of like have a conversation quickly, and then I was going to the airport. And I feel like it's not uncommon for that to be how someone comes out.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
I could see him sort of like thinking about it, mulling it over during the session, and because he didn't know how to deal with it being like agreeable, so she thought it was going well, then the session is over and he's like, I can't hold this in any longer. And especially if he's been like sort of opened up and vulnerable during the session, so he's really in the mood to hit her with a big truth.
And he explicitly says that he didn't want to tell the therapist because Lorena's like, why didn't you just say it? You weren't gay 2 seconds ago when we were in there. And he's like, yes, I was. But it's the Becky Ann Baker is just consistently an incredible actress. But like, it was so heartbreaking good. In this scene. Like,
yeah.
To watch her crumble in real time.
In that strip mall parking lot, just crying in her car. Really horrible. And I think she still hasn't totally, she still doesn't believe it. She says, like, you just don't want to fuck me.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then she says the most telling line, it's not about me, which is, you know, kind of the tell, like, we're supposed to see Hannah in this.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the strip mall when he rolls up with the Rieslings, it was like, this is, stop making jokes. This is serious, you guys. The character can't roll up with 2 Rieslings.
Yeah. Also, the whole, you know, her belief that the issue is that she got tenure, it's mm-hmm. so sort of heartbreaking that she, you know, to her, this was the big thing that happened. And she is almost she's like, if I just think about this thing, it's easier to think about than the actual terrible thing that is currently happening that is like going to ruin my or going to like, you know, destabilize my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was also like, even that, I'm like, yeah, why didn't he wait till after the party? The party's like that night. It's like, no, it's come true. On. Yeah,
it's true. And I do think, in fact, she is partly right that maybe there was a subconscious part of him that did want to ruin her night. I don't think that's out of the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a scene at the party when he's talking to Fred Melamed about, like, putting his book on ice.
Yeah.
For some sort of creative block or whatever. Like, he's clearly dissatisfied or, like, stagnant in some capacity. Like, and in true gay guy fashion, he shakes it up with a little bit of a dramatic announcement, a big reveal. I loved seeing Jackie Hoffman and Fred Melamed, though. Like,
talk about perfect casting.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And Jackie Hoffman in that wig.
Oh my God.
I love that.
They're the two of them are just like so perfectly typecast, like New York quirky academic Jews.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love them. I love Fred Melamed. He's so annoying in this.
This scene actually kind of took me out of it. I was like, and I couldn't tell if it was my memory being wrong or I didn't look it up, so I'm bringing it to you now. Her parents live in like Ohio, right?
Michigan.
They're in Michigan.
Because right. It kind of took me out that they were like, had this like, I mean, I assume now that they like work for university tenure, I get what that means, but I was like, this like super, like you were saying, like New York-y intellectual casting. Like I was kind of like, well, they are Midwestern. Like,
yeah,
there is a sort of thing with her, with the parents. I think you see the cracks show a little bit in terms of Lena Dunham herself not knowing any normal people and not growing up with any normal people, mm-hmm. where she's like, okay, I'm going to make them normal. They're from Michigan, but then I'm going to make them professors. So that's like a job I know where you can be both poor and smart. And then you're sort of like, I think it works with Tad kind of because he's sort of like queer-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But with Lorene, you are sort of like, okay, you can't style her like a complete like Midwestern mom and then also have her be presumably a humanities professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's having her cake and eating it too.
Yeah.
But then kind of in the other direction, like Jackie Hoffman being bored by her daughter, who's an infant cardiac surgeon. Like, I didn't know if that felt believably academic or Midwestern necessarily. Like,
felt very New York, which is why I got confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole scene felt very New York, which I love. Honey, I love New York.
That is that is like how people in sort of like humanities academia are like they are all delusional. They are all like, if they're not at like the best school, they have some sort of chip on their shoulders. And then in fact, put on a performance of being a New York intellectual, even more so than if they were at like Columbia or something. Mm-hmm. Like to me, that there was something recognizable in that. Like in that milieu. And if anything, Laureen is the one that sort of stuck out as like, okay, so where do you fit in here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
I also love their friend's daughter doing meth.
Doing meth. It's,
it's okay, because she's a dancer.
That was funny.
My heart was breaking for Laureen, though, when Tad is given this, like, mm-hmm. completely supercilious toast. Like, it's a little genuine, but, like, I don't know how he can pretend like nothing is the matter and expect Laureen to react in like a keeping up appearances kind of way. Like, it's just not realistic. Like,
well, it's a classic pulling someone into the closet with you in like a weird way, where like normally it's the opposite of like dating a closeted guy, and so you have to pretend you're just friends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one was like, oh no, you can't tell her and then not tell everyone. This is cruel.
Yeah.
I did like the counterbalance, though, of Laureen's affair with Fred Melamed being revealed as, because she's not this like saintly victim in all this. Like, the relationship has clearly had problems outside of Tad's homosexuality. And there's a future for her with other people, or like exploring herself outside of him. But I don't know. I always love the scenes with those two, because like it is such a lived in relationship. And I kind of forget how the trajectory of the next few episodes goes from here, and just any more like Tad Laureen content like is welcome by me for sure.
Yeah, I do love them. I also, his speech, he was like, I was kind of glad that she like got a little bit like laughing and sort of disruptive at that moment, because he was being like rude. Like, I thought it was interesting that he was like being like, my friend, my partner for the last, yeah. Like, I was like very purposefully choosing words that like she can't publicly argue with, but are like demoting her status in his life. I found so frustrating. And I understood her anger and liked it.
Yeah.
This show asks, what if gay guys were bad?
Yeah. he queened out a little bit in that moment.
I mean, it really is such a sort of archetype of like, such a sort of classically complicated character of like someone coming out late in life for whom it is impossible to not basically like ruin the lives, at least temporarily in the short term. I'm not saying everyone's lives are ruined, but mm-hmm. like to ruin the lives of like his partner, his children, like there's simply no way around it. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of no good way to do it. Like, no. I think he flopped hard, but I don't think there was any way for him to not flop in that dinner environment. Unless he, of course, like kept his mouth shut.
Yeah.
Waiting one day would have solved 90% of their problems. But I did think the scene with those two in the kitchen, when she's like, so you want to suck a dick now? Do you want a dick in your mouth? Like, it was like funny, but just so sad. And the phone call to Hannah, Hannah's monologue aside, which we'll get to.
Yes.
It just, I don't, this whole plot, like, it's just heartbreaking. And to go from like sitcom beats and other parts of this show to this kind of like actually wrenching home drama. I mean, only girls, you know, that like, that's a tough tonal tightrope to walk.
Well, and it's like, it's not even that it's going from one scene that is sitcom-y to another that is not at all. Like, the sitcom-y lines are interwoven into this mm-hmm. scene with them at the kitchen table. Like, she says, like, do you want to suck dicks now? Then Hannah calls and is being like a complete psycho as always. Like, and even Tad's like reactions, like, I think the facial, his, what he does with his face is sort of like comedic. Like, he's sort of cringing, you know, he's like reacting in this comedic way rather than like a sort of like looking into the distance dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even just, so you want to suck dick now? Oh, like, I mean, it is also just, it feels like she's almost teasing him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Laureen as a character is a bit you know, rough around the edges, much like our friend Hannah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Hannah comparing herself to Courtney Love in this monologue, though. My God. Perfect.
Well, that's another funny thing where it's like she's like twisting. She's literally like, well, I'm a complicated woman, and I've been reclaimed by myself. I'm reclaiming myself as a complicated woman.
Yeah, I am not this, but if I am this, then it is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not complicated. I'm not dramatic. And like, if I am being dramatic, it's because I'm concerned with real issues.
Yeah, like the financial crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
The financial crisis. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That line's so good. I'm responding to real issues. My existence is a commentary on the financial crisis.
Just watching Loreen react with like exasperation and be like, Hannah, like it's just like, that family dynamic is so well realized. Like I just can't imagine being exhausted by your own kid that much. Mm-hmm. But like they play it like it's like love and concern at its core, and like I thought the last shot of Hannah just being like, oh, was a perfect episode ender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was wondering if we were going to get something more comedic in that moment. Like, I was like, it's begging for it almost. And so the choice to not take it was smart. But I was like, what's it like? Very tense moment of like, mm-hmm. what's the line going to be?
Mm-hmm. I do love it being, Hannah, your father is gay.
Yeah. Well, to me, again, that was like the, you know, for the fan watching, you're like, oh, it is a callback to the earlier thing. So in that mm-hmm. sense, it is sort of a laugh line. But yeah. Do we think Loreen told Hannah herself to hurt? I mean, I guess she has so much on her mind. I'm not going to blame her.
I thought I was just like kind of shut Hannah up for a second.
Yeah.
There's definitely some of that. I feel like it was also just to share the, I guess, emotional baggage.
Yeah.
And, you know, she didn't want to face it alone. She like wants to hear someone else in disbelief about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we move on to our final segments?
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on this episode, or like, what did we think of it?
Wait, I do have something that I told Sam before we started recording, which I think is sort of an interesting little factoid. So I've been watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and last night I happened to watch the episode where Mac comes out, spoiler alert, which happened like 4 or 5 years ago. And then I watched this episode of Girls, both of them directed by Jamie Babbitt, the director of But I'm a Cheerleader. And I was like, first of all, what are the chances that I, in a period of 24 hours, watch like two episodes about an unlikely character coming out? But they were both, it's like they, when a show wants to do like a coming out story, they just like wheel her in and they're like, well, you can deal with this. But I just thought that was such a funny coincidence. And I so rarely, I mean, I guess now a little bit more than I used to, but I so rarely notice who directed an episode of television. But yeah, Jamie Babbitt.
That is so funny.
Yeah. If people have not seen But I'm a Cheerleader within the past few years, please go change that. I saw they're bringing it back to Criterion again for Pride Month, and like, you gotta,
it really holds
it
up. It's so good. Also, like, RuPaul is so good. And I mean, there's just like so many things that actually are even funnier now, 20 years later.
I hosted a screening of it last year here at UChicago, and the reception was a little muted for some reason, but like, I really do think it holds up.
I mean, I think it has bite to it. You know what I mean? It's not like watching, I don't know, some crowd play. It's not like
watching. Yeah, you're not watching Love, Simon. Like
I do think it is like a real satire, and I think we're not used to that these days.
Uh-oh.
So the first question we ask at the end of every episode is, which girl are you in this episode? I'm certainly Hannah saying, you want me to be silent and I'm up for it. That is, I don't know, that line alone is really hit home for me. So
I think in this episode, I am again Shosh. I feel I was on Fire Island this weekend, and like it was so weird to be like, wait, how do you do this again? Like, we're, you know, you're like, it's like everything is a little bit flirty, everything is a little bit sexual. And it was sort of like, okay, like I was like literally being like, what do you say to someone you don't know anything about and don't know who, like I was like, maybe I just like spin around and grind on them, and it's like, no, you don't do that. Like it was just like, okay, what do you do here? And it was a humbling moment, and so I was feeling very Shosh in that moment.
I was gonna say I was Shosh, like, yeah, just in the sort of slimy vagina of it all. But I mean, I think there's a sort of, I could relate to Marnie a little bit. I could relate to the sort of delusion that Marnie has, where like she goes from actually making a very solid point of like not having enough honesty about money is like one of the things that can really break a relationship, to then immediately being like, yeah, I'll marry you. I do think there's, you know, I can, not so much in romantic relationships, but it's easier for me to be sort of swept off my feet by like a grand gesture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also felt like Shosh, so I'm not adding much to the discussion, but I did feel like Shosh accidentally, or not accidentally, talking about her slimy vagina, yeah. Because why did I say that? And now it's out of my mouth. we also like to go through the last episode and talk about our favorite, least favorite, most memorable outfits. So I need to call out Shosh's blue rubber gloves, because what is she doing with them? What's her next task? Is she bleaching the floor? Is she giving herself a wax? We'll never know.
Wow. It's a
full surgical procedure. Mm-hmm. Mine was Fran's Ernest Hemingway t-shirt.
Okay, I actually think I was thinking about Ray's canvassing outfit and how it was so 2014, where it's like you think like men's clothing isn't like changing that much, and then you see that and you're like, oh my god, we are in a different time. And you know, just as a historian, of course, I want to respect the past.
Yeah. And you know, I'm realizing I've already said mine, which is Shoshana's hair clip when she's on her date.
Yeah. Shoshana has a permanent spot.
Yeah.
She's got style.
She's got style.
She's got style. She's got grace. She's got it all, folks.
And then final segment, MVP and LVP of the episode. Oof.
This is a tough one. I mean, I think for me, my explanation would be that it is Tad for both. He is the reason for the season. He's why we woke up this morning. We wanted to see this man come out of the closet, and then also watching it all happen, you're like, why are you, you're flopping. You're flopping. Mm-hmm. This is have your moment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say my MVP is the actress Maude Apatow.
Yes.
And my LVP is, I mean, I might even go with Marnie for LVP. Like, she's flopping this episode.
Yeah,
true.
Marnie's kind of the perma LVP for me until the panic of Central Park. It has to be that. I'll give Shosh my MVP, because awkward date line aside, I thought that first date went swimmingly, and Jason Ritter is a hunk. So that,
yeah,
to me, successful.
I think maybe the LVP for me is probably Hannah, just because she you know, took Maude Apatow to get her frenulum pierced, and I don't approve of that. And MVP, you guys honestly said all the ones that I feel, but I'm going to call back Tad and Lorene's friend's daughter who did meth. And
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honorary mention.
She's on a journey.
Yeah.
very transformative.
Oh, it's crazy that none of us said MVP Laureen, who really like persevered so gracefully through it all.
Well, it wasn't that graceful.
I guess that's true.
She's like a honorary.
Yeah. I respected that she didn't at least she didn't out Tad at the dinner, because I was afraid she was going to do that.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting it.
Yeah,
even a light one, like when that guy, when the other guy was like, "I'm in love with you," I was kind of expecting her to sort of drop the bomb there and be like, "No, yeah. He's just gay now. We have to go."
I'm not getting a divorce. My husband's just gay.
Yeah. So for that. For her tact and grace under fire, yes. She wins the ally of the episode award.
Yeah, for... episode award.
She's P flag. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. This was an absolute treat to have y'all.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Stradio Lab is an absolutely fantastic podcast that you can get anywhere you get your podcast feeds. And if y'all would like to be found on social media, where can people find you?
I'm Sam Taggart on Instagram, and also Worst Radio Lab on Instagram.
That's right.
And George,
I'm George Severus on all platforms. Follow the pod. Come to our live show in Brooklyn at the Bell House on June 15th.
There you go. Happy Pride to all.
Yes, happy Pride to all.
Happy Pride to all. And with that, we'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.